Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Richard Brazier from Ancient and Modern Wines. How are you, Richard?
Very well, thanks.
Excellent, excellent. I want to talk a wee bit about information gathering, really, about wines. You deal with ancient and modern wines, it sort of says it on the tin, really. So you're buying a lot of old wines. What we want to talk about today is a wee bit about sort of where you source your wines, and also sort of how do you find information to know which wines to buy? You know, are you a massive repository, you just know everything, or do you use other information? So let's start off with sourcing wines.
Yes, it tends to be a bit piecemeal, really. A lot of people think, oh, you must go to France and get all your wines from there, but nothing could be further from the truth.
Well, the French like to drink their wines young,
well,
don't
exactly,
they?
And any older wines in Bordeaux, for example, are incredibly expensive, so no, that's not the place. So, but to be honest, we tend to, well, there are other companies that they may have things that we can deal with, but mainly it's people's private cellars, to be honest, and things that people have kept for what they think is probably too long, or sort of it's now got to this appreciated in value so much that they don't feel confident to drink it, basically.
What about dead people's estates?
Well, I didn't want to bring that up, but yes, that is quite a lot of it is that. It's not a morbid thing, but sometimes, you know, very often it's a sort of widow who's got wines that her husband had and doesn't know what to do with them, that sort of thing.
What about the tax implications with that? Do you get involved in that, or just...
No, because basically we just pay them and then they can decide what they want to do with them.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure what the situation on that is now, to be honest. At one stage it didn't have a tax implication.
A while ago I read a book called The Billionaire's Vinegar. And they were talking about the sort of heyday of buying old wines, you know, in the sort of 50s and 60s, I think it was, when there was always these old people who had cellars full of old wines they'd been buying for years and years and years, and all of a sudden they realised, heck, these wines are worth a bit of money. Is there still a bit of that sort of stuff going on?
I think what we have to realise is that the wine market is utterly different now from what it was, say, in the 50s, 60s, 70s. Very much the fine wines were always the domain of the aristocracy and the upper classes. So port, for example, was always, you know, people would have their regular supply of vintage port, very often brought over in pipes, barrels, and bottled by the local merchant. And the same with first growth Bordeaux, Latour, you know, I don't know, but sort of various sort of aristocracy in Scotland, for example, would have a regular delivery from Lafitte and Latour every year, and very often in big bottles, which was very rare now to see. Sort of some of the wines they had was just extraordinary. So when Christie's started their auctions, and I think it was at the end of the 60s, Michael Broadbent, who was in charge of Christie's then, he couldn't believe the sort of things that they were seeing. These were incredibly rare bottles, and obviously at a time when that sort of the aristocracy needed a bit of money, to be honest. So it was a different thing altogether then. And now the wine market is open to everybody and very much more global, and so it's much more transparent as well. You don't see too many really old, very, very valuable things. And you can see on the internet, or the search, or something like wine searcher, who's got what and where. But I don't think there are too many sellers. I've spoken to people, you know, 'cause it's about port. And I was saying that we just don't find that many cellars full of vintage port now, whereas even 15 years ago, you'd find people who had 40, 50 cases of port without any problem at all, but that just doesn't seem to happen now.
Oh, okay. So when you're sourcing wines, it's very much, what, a case here, a couple of cases
there? It does tend to be, and because we're a small company, we can do that. But most wine companies don't have any interest in that at all, and a lot of them just quite happy to move something from one warehouse to another, basically. But I'm afraid I like the hands-on aspect of it and seeing and feeling these wines.
Do you go out to the sites and look at them?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Well, where possible, you always have to look at them. It's just like antiques in a way. It's a lot of people, and it's slightly naive of them, but they sort of say, I've got this bottle, how much is it worth? But I need to know so many things about it. What is the level of the wine in the bottle? What's the label like? What's the capsule like? Where's it been stored? And now you just have to see photographs. And not mobile phone photographs, which tend to be pretty
rubbish.
Ordinary. Yeah, well, I'm afraid so. So proper photographs, really, so that I can see them. But otherwise, I would need to physically see them.
Okay, but do you go to the sites as much now, or do you just get them to take a nice photo?
Well, if it's a number of cases, then I would go wherever it was in the country. Mm-hmm. But most of it I tend to do is go, the Midlands are probably as far north as we go very often, and then the southeast quite a lot, and London. So that's where it tends to mainly be.
Yep. And how do you deal with things like forgeries? Do you see a lot of forgeries?
No, well, fortunately not. And over experience over the years, you know what to look for. The thing is that it's quite complicated also, because you do have some chateaus that used to be able to rebottle their wines. Mm. It was allowed at La Tour, for example, and a number of others, where you would take your wines to them and say, but the level's gone down a little bit, so could you fill it up? And it was all a slightly grey area, and it had to be something of a similar standard. But I don't know. They don't do that sort of thing anymore, I don't think. And so you tend to find something. There were Latours with new labels and that sort of thing. They look forgeries to some people, but if you know the story of why they look new, then you know that they're not forgeries. I personally don't think, certainly in this country, that there are that many forgeries. And I think if people do forge things, it's going to be things like Dom Perignon, Petrus. I don't hear that much about it, and I know that the people in the trade are generally pretty clued up about it, and certainly the auction houses, I think, are. So, no, I haven't come across much touchwood so far.
Do you see much? You talked about bottles being relabeled. What about recorking? I actually bought a bottle of Penfolds Grange from you guys, and I understand that Penfolds will still recork your wines, put new corks in them if they're quite old. But the cork I got from the wine I got from you completely disintegrated. The cork just dissolved when I put the screw cap on.
Well, I did warn her.
You did warn me. No,
yes.
I know.
It sounds strange.
It actually gave me confidence to know that it was a real wine.
Well, it reassured me, because I put on a tasting about 20 years ago of Penfolds going back to 79, and every single bottle the cork was very poor. And I did mention it to the chap who did the tasting with us, and he was very surprised, but there was something clearly wrong with them. The wines are excellent, but the corks were very poor.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see the Chateau still doing recorking? They used to do recorking.
Well, yeah, but I don't think it's not an accepted thing, I don't think, anymore. And I don't think it happens anymore.
One of the reasons I was sort of linking in to forgeries was because I've noticed you've got a number of books on the side there. When I went and spoke to some of the auction houses, they were talking about how they've got books of photos of old wines and labels and things like that, so they can use that to get an idea of any potential forgeries and all that sort of stuff. But your books don't. I had a quick flick through when you're out of the room. Yeah. Sorry about that. And they're more text orientated with tables and things like that. So
yeah, no, I don't have any books on forged bottles. But one helpful thing that's been useful in recent years is the Google Images, because you put in the vintage, and I mean, vintage port is another thing, because so much of it used to be bottled in this country. You get so many different bottlings and so many different labels, and I think it's right in saying that more vintage port was actually bottled in this country than actually bottled in a Porto. But that was, and they were doing it properly, and if it was the right merchants, Grancers and James's, Corny, Barry Brothers, that sort of thing, as long as they're doing it properly, then it was as good as anywhere, quite frankly.
Yeah.
No, it's a minefield, really, that sort of thing. And but Google Images is a good place to go if you're worried about it.
Well, I was worried, obviously, because I didn't know you at all, and I thought, oh, I'm buying a bottle from this fella. And when I got the bottle, I Googled the wine and the image, and the label was completely different to everything that the wine you supplied, because it had the importer at the bottom. And I was quite worried about that for a while, simply because, you know, it looks different to the 81 Grange that everybody else was showing me photos of an image. And then eventually I found one with the importer on there, and I sort of clicked. I thought, well, it's a legal requirement in the UK to put the name of the importer in the bottle, or it is now anyway.
Yes.
And that was the difference, was it had the name there, and they don't have a back label where you'd normally see the name of the importer on
the back. I think the rest
label.
Of the label was fairly similar though, wasn't it? You make it sound like a hand drawn it.
No, it was in crayon actually. I was a little No, everything else looked reasonably pucker, but I was a wee bit worried, and eventually in Google Images I saw a copy of that, and I thought, well, yeah, that was all right. And then when I pulled the cork out and it disintegrated, I thought, shit, at least it's old.
Yes.
And then when I tasted it, it tasted pretty good. So
we bought it from a chap, he had three bottles, and they all looked in very good condition, and as I say, I was perfectly happy with them, so it's nothing to worry about.
Yeah. And what sort of books do you recommend? First of all, textbooks, just to help people get a feel for what's a good vintage, what's a bad vintage. Who do you
Well, the simple one is, the easiest one and the one people tend to look at is Robert Parker. But I would say for older wines, and unfortunately he hasn't updated it since, I'm just having a look, but he hasn't updated it for a number of years. Oh, here we are, yes, 10 years. But Michael Broadbent's Vintage Wine Guide is certainly my favourite because he doesn't definitively say, I mean, very often, certainly in Robert Parker, you have one tasting note saying it tastes like this, and it's probably the last one he's tasted. Michael Broadbent will say, well, I've tasted this an embarrassing number of times, and that's his words, not mine, but about 27 times, and he'll say the last few occasions it was like this, before it was like this, and you get a feel of how it's developed, and it's not just one wine he's had.
Mm.
But I also like the way he writes it. He gets to the point, and he's got quite a dry wit, so I particularly like that for older wines. Certainly.
And also, I suppose, as wines age, they are a living thing, so you do get bottle variation.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So I remember hearing about, you know, when the critics go down to Bordeaux. I've never been to Bordeaux for the En Premier tasting, just to show my ignorance here, but the chateaus will taste it, and they'll choose the bottle that tastes the best for the,
exactly,
the critics,
yes.
And that's not really a fair indicator of what you're going to get.
Well, I'm afraid, I mean, we are very much more ancient than modern, and I'm not a fan of En Premier at all, because they really want to show you what is the most forward and fruity wine that they're producing. And I don't like the way that so much, 70% of the wine is sold on the back of basically something that hasn't even made it into a bottle. Well, we'd have made it in a bottle for another 2 years. So En Premier, I find, we never deal in it, and I don't like it at all. I think that you only get a feel for wine after about 5 or 10 years, quite frankly.
Mm. Yeah, and so a single tasting isn't really...
Well, no, and especially as it's not even put together. You could easily be getting a wine that's got far more a Merlot in it, for example, but when it comes to the finished blend, it may not be like that.
What other sort of technical books do you recommend people would have a look at?
Well, I think, because, see, Parker covers everything, and same with Clive Coates. I think Clive Coates, particularly in Burgundy, is very good. And I think that's probably it. The other books that you were wanting me to mention were things like Wine and War, which, again, I'm afraid is very much for sort of people who like older wine or have an interest about it.
But that's more of a novel, though, isn't it?
Well, not a novel. It is a sort of history, but it's just put in a way that it's just fascinating to see the struggle people went through to keep the vineyards going and basically stop the Germans taking it all.
I did a book review on The Billionaire's Vinegar shortly after it was banned by Michael Broadbent in the UK. I thought, right, got to get that.
Yes, quite.
You know,
yes.
Someone...
Good book, I must admit. I enjoyed reading
it. Yeah,
I
found that.
And I don't think Michael Broadbent comes out particularly appallingly in it at all.
No.
I think it's...
I think he's done himself more damage by trying
by
to...
By highlighting it.
Yeah.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it's... I do also like Liquid Gold, because there are not many books written about sweet wines in the world. So Stephen Brooks' Liquid Gold is a very good book.
What's that about?
Well, it's just sweet wine from around the world, obviously.
Oh, it's more of a technical book, is it?
Yes, it is, really, yes. And obviously, but it's not put in a way that is too highbrow. It's very, very easy to read and understand. I mean, it's obviously dominated by Sauternes and Barzac, because they're probably where the best sweet wines come from.
Oh, okay, Leon.
A Côte de Leon, I love, yes, exactly, yes, and Cardachon, but they have the balance, whereas I think, as I said earlier, around the world, just a little bit, not quite the,
not the acidity. Sort of, not even in Tokai.
Different style, but I do like Tokai, I must admit, yes, yeah. Lovely.
Day, it was quite lovely.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How many Butunios did you have?
Oh, God, I can't remember, it was either 3 or 4, I can't remember, actually, it's, yes, it was Royal Tokai Company, and I can't remember. It's the one we normally drink it in tastings, and I just we had a bottle we opened up for a tasting, and I we didn't quite get through that bottle, so
yes.
I'll guess it up and I'll have it at Christmas time.
Exactly. No, they're fun wines, Tokai, I must admit.
Just touching on, we talked a wee bit earlier about where you source your wines. Do you buy from auctions?
But it has to be wines in very good condition. I mean, I'm always very confident of Sotheby's, Christie's, Bonhams. They are pretty careful with what they buy, and they describe it very well, so we make a point of trusting them, really, basically.
Is there anything you should be aware of that you'd recommend to listeners when you go to auction houses? You know, is there things that you look at, or do you...
Well, there's nothing obvious. I mean, to be honest, I tend to buy from auction by sticking a fax through. Now, I don't... The days of sitting listening to 900 bids go through is long gone. I find it incredibly boring, but... Well, not really. I mean, unfortunately, it's a matter of seeing the bottle, and it's unfortunately experience over years of seeing old bottles and different bottlings and all sorts. You know, because again, pre the 70s, there'd be Belgian bottlings, there'd be Bordeaux bottlings, there'd be Chateau bottlings. And Chateau bottlings were not great because they didn't have the money or the facilities. So very often a local bottler would turn up with his vehicle and sit in the driveway, bottling in the midday sun sort of thing. So yeah. It wasn't absolutely terrific. So it almost better to have a local merchant do it, or indeed the Belgian bottlings, which were very good. So nowadays it is quite difficult to people are not that keen on having something that isn't Chateau bottled. But to be honest, in the 50s and 60s, you're almost sometimes better off without Chateau bottled.
Okay. All right then, Richard. I think we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time. It's been superb.
Good. Thanks very much.
Cheers, bud.